content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, everyone. This is Bahati Mutisya for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Teen Vogue and Teen Inc. Our first article is titled, American Citizenship for Natives Was Withheld, Then Rights Were Long Ignored. This is a part of Teen Vogue's OG History series, and this article is by Ruth Hopkins and was published June 5th, 2019. In this op-ed, Ruth Hopkins, known as Kankudutowin, Red Road Woman, a Dakota Lakota Sioux writer, biologist, attorney, and former tribal judge, explains the long, bumpy path to American citizenship for Native peoples in the United States and why the designation is contested. Artifacts and DNA evidence prove that Native people had occupied North America for upwards of 20,000 years, but many elders, my grandmother included, insist that we have always been here. My people, the Oketi Sakowin Great Sioux Nation, share stories passed down over generations that recall how our ancestors witnessed the Crab Nebula supernova, whose light reached Earth in the 11th century. It is now marked by an empty center within our astronomical map, located in our sacred Black Hills, where we have an ancient circle of sacred sites that mirror constellations and stars in the night sky overhead. Every site is marked with a star, except the one mentioned, because the Crab Nebula supernova is long gone from visibility. Today, there are 573 federally recognized tribes of indigenous people in the United States and about 5 million American citizens who claim to possess Native heritage. Though our ancient civilizations predate the 13 colonies that would become part of the United States of America, Natives were subject to centuries of genocide, land theft, and colonization, then denied citizenship until June 2, 1924, a full 136 years after the United States Constitution was ratified. The United States was built on the backs of African slaves over the bodies of the indigenous killed by genocide and on stolen land. After Black people were freed from slavery, they became citizens in 1868 under the 14th Amendment. But when making that decision, lawmakers specifically excluded Natives from the law. I'm not yet prepared to pass a sweeping act of naturalization by which all the Indian savages, wild or tame, belonging to a tribal relation, are to become my fellow citizens, Michigan Senator Jacob Howard said to Congress at the time. When the decision was made, Natives living in America were actively discriminated against and brutalized. The government struck treaties, the supreme law of the land, according to the Constitution, with tribes who they tricked into making peace before breaking them. Tribes were being forcibly removed from their homelands and placed in prison of war camps like Pine Ridge in southwestern South Dakota and moved to reservations where they needed permission from the government agents to leave. Massacres like Sand Creek and Wounded Knee, wherein the U.S. government and where the U.S. military and government killed hundreds of innocent Natives, mostly women and children, were occurring, and we, the descendants of these horrors, still live with the historical trauma stemming from these events. Native children were taken from their families and placed in boarding schools to be assimilated. In those institutions, their hair was shorn, they were punished for speaking their own language, and abuse was rampant. After having their lands and resources stolen, Natives lived in extreme poverty. Many more died of disease and starvation, others at the hands of racist colonial settlers. Many tribes have never recovered economically and are based in some of the poorest counties in the country. And even after citizenship was granted in 1924, natives still did not receive the rights of all others with the same designation. One becomes a citizen of the United States. Rights include the freedom to express yourself and to worship as you wish, the right to a prompt, fair trial by jury, the right to vote in elections by public officials, and to apply for certain federal employment, the right to run for elected office, and the freedom to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Natives did not receive the right to worship as they wished. We were persecuted for practicing our religion, ceremonies, and rites in this country until the passage of the American Indian Religious Freedom Act of 1978, and natives could be jailed for practicing their ancestry and for practicing their ancestral ways. However, native people could freely worship through Christian denominations. As the rights afforded with citizenship were bestowed but not enforced, U.S. citizenship for natives remained a contentious issue, not just for white lawmakers. It's been an active discussion in our communities, too. There were natives in 1924, and there are still natives today, who did not want U.S. citizenship. The granting of citizenship to a new country of invaders who committed genocide and stole land was and is seen as an attempt to fully assimilate native people into mainstream society, one centered on patriarchy and white supremacy. Nearly a century ago, they were not asked whether they wanted to be citizens, nor did natives consent to the laws imposed over them by colonizing forces, the powerful governing bodies of America. They were already citizens of their individual tribal nations. Others, however, saw that the government and laws of the country that surrounded their sovereign lands affected them and the lives of the people, and they wanted citizenship so they could have a voice in determining their future through voting in U.S. elections or perhaps even running for office. My grandfather was one of those people. He fought in World War I as an Okete Sakowin man before he had U.S. citizenship. He wanted the designation for us, and he paid for it in blood. Citizenship came just after he served. Yet, despite this federal mandate, natives were often barred from voting, as the right is governed by state law. Much like how the southern states passed Jim Crow laws to stop black citizens from exercising their right to vote, individual states stood in the way of allowing Native Americans to participate in state and federal elections. For half a century, natives advocated for their right to vote state by state. The last to pass laws granting these rights was New Mexico in 1962. Meaning that it was only 57 years ago that all states agreed natives should be afforded full voting rights. Additional protections came 3 years later, when President Lyndon B. Johnson passed the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which strengthened voting rights for every American, including Native people, by outlawing exclusionary practices that deny or abridge the right of any citizens of the United States to vote on account of race or color. But the act wasn't enough to ensure that citizenship rights were granted to natives. Beyond voting, major injustice still persists on other fronts. So, to combat, Native people successfully pushed for legislation that specifically ensured they would be afforded the protection of all constitutional rights promised to every other U.S. citizen, like freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, the right to peacefully assemble, to petition for redress of grievances, and to a trial by jury, of which they were still being denied. The Indian Civil Rights Act of 1968, ICRA, passed, helping to right these wrongs. The battle for equality as citizens has continued ever since. Native people who are members of federally recognized tribes have dual citizenship in their respective tribes and as U.S. citizens. They continue to face persecution for practicing their religion. Those who exercise their rights to free speech and freedom of assembly by protesting the construction of environmentally harmful fossil fuel projects on their lands without their consent are now being targeted by state anti-protest laws in places like South Dakota and Texas. Native voter suppression continues even after poll taxes, literacy tests, and intimidation were outlawed by the Voting Rights Act of 1965, as the full power of the act to protect voters has been dampened. The Shelby v. Holder decision, rendered by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2013, effectively removed a provision of the law that requires states with histories of racial bias in voting to get permission before passing new voting-related laws, and mere weeks before the 2018 midterm elections, the Supreme Court allowed a new voter ID law to stand in North Dakota that prevented hundreds of Native residents from voting, swaying the election in favor of Republicans. While we continue to face battles to see our rights fully realized, there have been successes too. There are now groups like the Native American Voting Rights Coalition, which was founded in 2015 with the goal of removing barriers to Native American registration and voting and to help voters be more active and informed. Representation in government is changing as well. The 2018 midterm elections saw the election of two Native women to Congress for the first time in history, Representative Deb Haaland and Representative Sharice Davids. True equality for Native citizens has yet to occur, but we will continue to strive for it as individuals while expressing our collective rights as members of sovereign tribal nations. The history of Native citizenship, granted less than 100 years ago, is important to remember in these times. Our next article from Teen Vogue is titled, Normani is Charting New Territory, Rooted in Relatability. I'm never going to get my first album back. This article is by Travel Anderson and was published back in October 6th, 2020. Normani always wanted to be in a girl group. When she tells me this, about 35 minutes into our conversation, my brow instantly furrows. Not that she noticed, as our Zoom cameras were requested to be off. It's hard to imagine someone with her star power preferring to sit unseen. But she shares with me that when she was younger, she told her mom that her dream of being in the next Destiny's Child was because of her undying admiration of the group that gifted us Beyoncé, Kelly, and Michelle. Today, she admits she was scared of standing on her own. There was just that level of comfortability and security, and me feeling safe with being seen, but not too seen, she says, pausing for emphasis. But her pause is perhaps too long, long enough for me to sense her discomfort in what she's just shared. She breaks the tension with a singular, self-knowing laugh. At this moment, it's all beginning to make sense. The reason we've been waiting more than a year for new music following her critically acclaimed debut single and one of 2019's best songs, Motivation, is because the Atlanta-born 24-year-old is anxious. After all, Normani is a black woman charting a new territory that's rooted in relatability, and one who is simultaneously incredibly talented. Vulnerability is talking about the fact that I do get anxiety sometimes, and just showing the consumer that what that feels like for me, she admits. Just the fact that I'm in this position that I'm in, but I don't want to be so unattainable. I'm just the girl next door. Every story that might influence an aspiring pop star suggests that being a darker-skinned black girl is an insurmountable barrier. The popular music and media diet she consumed in her youth and the well-documented history of colorism is in just about every industry, from music to movies, beauty to fashion, sent the message that it would be harder for her to make it to the top of the charts. This requires a great deal of consciousness as it relates to the task at hand in order to be successful. Excellence is then not just an aspiration. Normani must be a living, breathing example of it at every turn. There's no such expectation that I have for myself, so adding fans' expectations onto that can be a lot, but it really does motivate me, she says. I really want to create a body of work that's going to count, you know? I'm never going to get my first album back. By now, Normani's life is fairly known. Raised in New Orleans until Hurricane Katrina displaced her family to the Houston area in 2005, as a kid, she was a competitive dancer, gymnast, and beauty queen. She recorded her first song, a pop track called Do, at 13. Following a successful 2012 solo audition on The X Factor, the judges placed her into a girl group, which eventually became known as Fifth Harmony, for the rest of the competition. They placed the third and went on to become, according to Billboard, the biggest girl group of the 2010s. From the outside looking in, Normani was living the dream, and she often, likely unintentionally, pulled attention away from her other group mates. She was just that good, in the pocket of every beat and performing at a level that demanded audiences take notice. Even before Fifth Harmony went from 5 to 4 members, many often said she would be the Beyoncé of her group. When Fifth Harmony went on indefinite hiatus in 2018, there was one question on everybody's mind: what will Normani do? Her answer, through a series of actions, was career-defining. Following a 2-song EP with Calvin Harris, she released Waves, featuring the rapper Black. The music video, a sensual, space-set production for the vibey breakup song that superbly showcases her dance skills, eye for detail, and overall talent expected of an up-and-coming legendary child, won a 2019 MTV Video Music Award for Best R&B Video. She released Love Lies with Khalid, a duet with Sam Smith called Dancing with a Stranger, and both went number one on Top 40, and cemented herself as one to watch with the visual that accompanied Motivation. She followed that up with soundtrack collaborations, Ariana Grande and Nicki Minaj for Charlie's Angels, and Megan Thee Stallion for Birds of Prey. Anyone paying attention can attest that Normani keeps raising the bar for herself and others. While her singing chops are very much a gift, what separates her from the pack is a knack for choreography that engenders comparisons to Janet Jackson in her prime. The result of her stepping into the solo life with an aplomb, feign or actual, is a potentially unattainable standard hanging over her head that she feels she must hit. Stepping out on one's own often comes with the room to make mistakes, but being a public figure and one who means so much to so many, she's seemingly not given space. That's where the last 6 months have come in handy. The near halt of the hustle and bustle of the music industry has been a blessing in disguise, Normani says, and has given her the necessary time to find her voice. Obviously, aside from just how devastating this moment is, I've been able to get to know myself in a way that I hadn't been able to before, she says. Investing in self-care has made her more comfortable with being vulnerable in her music, because now I'm tapped into myself in such an intimate way. The new album then, when it finally drops, will be her reintroduction as Normani, the solo star. The guards are down, the defense mechanisms are disabled. It will be an opportunity for the public to be able to get to know me in a way that they haven't been able to before, she says. I feel hurt, sad, elated sometimes. I feel like I'm in my head. I feel not so confident. I just want to be able to show not only women, but people in general, that I am a human as well. I'm struck by Normani's admission to just be seen as human by the people who consume her art. Perhaps her vulnerability is her way of navigating the undue pressure put on Black women in a racist, patriarchal society that deems them subhuman. Nevertheless, Normani is optimistic about this challenge. She says it's for the fans that stood by her side when racist trolls cyberbullied her while she was in Fifth Harmony. Her resilience is for the Black girls who, like her, fail the brown paper bag test, but are still a standard of beauty. Representation, like I always say, is key, she says. To be a young woman that looks like myself, I just feel like being a positive example is a part of my legacy. It's me wanting to create better opportunities for us, and also just for people who think that they got us figured out. I want to show that we are multifaceted and capable of much more than we get credit for in the music industry and also in society. I feel like I have a duty. Therein lies the importance of Normani being named an ambassador for Rihanna's Savage by Fenty lingerie line and the latest beauty industry interloper as an Urban Decay global citizen, and why she's jumped at the opportunity to be a featured dancer and master splitter in the music video for Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion's hit WAP. The WAP video was really excited to be a part of, just because I feel like we're in a time in which we're in a time in music where women and Black women are really on top, which is something I feel like we haven't seen in a very, very long time, she says. Where I come from, we were all about female empowerment. The fact that I could be a part of such a special moment, embracing our sexuality, in which I definitely think there's a double standard, I was excited to be a part of. By the end of our chat, it's clear to me that there's something beyond fortune and fame that drives Normani, which pushes her past her insecurities and ahead into the unknown. The church queen in me asked about her faith, which she'd only marginally discussed before. She let out a deep breath. In my mind, the classic gospel track, How I Got Over, is queued up. She tells me how God has been her backbone for as long as she can remember. That faith gives her strength. She shares that God told her long ago that she was destined for greatness, even when she wanted to hide in the background. She sees herself as a servant, a vessel for change, as everything happens according to God's will. Honestly, for me, it's bigger than the music, she continues. As her speech slows, I can tell she really believes what she's saying. As much as I love what I do, I want to change lives, and I want to reach as many people as I can. I feel like that's the difference between doing something that you love and also having purpose. I want to tell our stories, and like I said, be a representation that Black girls can do anything. I feel like it's my calling. As for the album, she'll know in her spirit when the time is right to release it. Her divinely directed gut hasn't failed yet. But I'm close, she offers. When God tells me that it's done, then it'll be done. I'll feel it, you know? And to wrap up this article, I want to describe the photography that comes with the article. The photography was by Micah Carter. And the first one is an image of the photographer capturing Normani in an orange and black spotted dress with large green earrings. And she has beautiful braids, partly cornrowed and then straight out in the back. The next photo is her on the cover of Teen Vogue. It's titled Normani, the Girl Next Door, a beautifully floral print yellow and blue blazer with large hoop earrings, and her hair is still braided. And with more poses for that outfit, one photograph says, Normani wears a Christopher John Rogers suit jacket and pant, pretty pricey, Kiri earrings, Pawaka sunglasses, and Vera Wang platform sandals. The suit and jacket are $1,395, the earrings $995, no, I'm sorry. The suit jacket is $1,395. The pants $995. The carry earrings are $550. The Pawaka sunglasses and the sandals $1,250 together, I'm guessing. The next image is her standing in the same outfit with the shades. The next photo is a picture of her. It's a close-up with large earrings and her hands in some red gloves. She has on a blue dress. It says, Normani wears a Schiaparelli electric blue silk faille gown and an Alessandria Rich earrings, which are $490, and gloves that are called We Love Colors gloves, $35, and Awake Mode sandals, $690. There's another image of her sitting down in that dress. The sandals have some fringe on them. The dress is very, very large. It's like, looks like a blanket, but it's quite, very, very colorful. And then the next set is, Normani wears a Burberry trench coat, $3,990, Burberry skirt, Burberry earrings, $460, and a Lillian Shalom gloves, $800. Okay, we've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope that you've enjoyed it. My name is Bahati Mutisia, and I'm reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.